we'll probably look at some people in the future and be like, glad that wasn't a thing. Like when Sudani came out, I mean, still hate it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back.
This is the Late Night Motor Club,
the only podcast you care about. I am Alex, and this is Keith.
I'm Steven. That's Keith.
I'm Tyler, and that's Keith.
Okay, he's going to go do his own thing now. That's okay. But welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back. This is episode 11.
11.
Actually on track 11. This time.
Yeah.
But today, I think Tyler's going to bring us into what today's subject is.
So today, I want to open up a conversation about the car scene in which we are going to dive deep and kind of express our opinions on what the current car scene trend is and what we feel like it is and how it's going to stem and last in time. Throughout the whole time of the car scene, right, we have like our early hot rodders, and in the early 2000s we have our tuner cars, and then we have the era that we're kind of in now, which I don't quite know how to put a label on it and say definitively this is the era of, I would say, the wide body and chassis mount wings.
That's what it feels like, at least.
Yeah.
Also, like, camber is definitely more heavily based, right, in terms of kind of the show scene.
Yeah,
versus, like, you look back into the 2000s, in the 2000s, it wasn't really camber or anything like that.
Fitment wasn't a thing at all.
No.
They had some doo-doo dog water fitment, you know? It was bad. But that was the style of the time.
Right.
You know, and nowadays we're just...
Right. When do you guys really feel like the style changed to become low and fitted? Like, so in the early 2000s with our tuner cars, we had like heavy neon and all these things, and they were definitely obviously influenced by the Japanese market, right, and the car style and the scene out that way, and guys were getting real low, but they weren't poking the wheels out like crazy. They weren't adding camber like crazy. When did that happen?
It's hard to exactly say, given that, like, when it did change, I was only a kid and I wasn't really in the community or anything like that, but I feel like it changed somewhere in the time of like 2008, 2010, and then started cycling more to kind of like lower cars when Stance came into effect in terms of camber and fitment. And then like 2012, 2013, I think that's when kind of wide bodies were becoming pushed a little bit more.
Right. So I totally agree with you, because I feel like in the early days of, I want to say, Stance Nation, Stance Nation, Super Street, Illust, all these things, for the most part, I remember the conversations that I was having with my friends in that time frame when I was in like ninth grade was like, oh, do you like tuck? Do you like poke?
Hella flush, and, dude. Hella flush.
Right. Yeah. And the things that we were talking about at the time was literally just stock body being low and how you like the fitment of your wheels and the diversity in which the cars were built, were like how much people were pulling their fenders, how tightly they can tuck their wheel to lip and fender to lip, and if you're how you wanted your wheel set up. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, I would say after I graduated high school, people started, it's not that cars weren't wide body before that were race cars, but that started coming to the streets. And people started cutting their cars and started putting these wide bodies on. And that's kind of where I feel like we're at now.
I feel like definitely the biggest pop that I agree with you that we're not old heads enough to really know that difference between like the early 2000s to like now, or even the 90s. But I feel like the biggest pop for wide bodies for like the general public was like the first Rocket Bunny kit.
Yeah. And I
the,
think
the Rocket Bunny FRS kit. Yeah. I think that's
what's his name with the orange one?
The orange.
Y'all know who I'm talking about. Forge Star wheels. It was like the first Rocket Bunny FRS in California.
See, the real Rocket Bunny one that sent it off for me, shout out Daniel to Kilogram with his 240 and his BRZ. I feel like those are kind of the first two wide body cars that really hit the map for me that were like,
the one,
damn,
the one that popped off in for me is Jay, who has that yellow S 2000, but his first build was kind of the that white Rocket Bunny FRS. He has that yellow S 2000 that's on air.
I don't think any of us know who any of us are talking about.
No.
Oh well. Anyways, we get the point. Basically, there was a handful of cars that were like kind of the first to really push it or get it in front of people.
I mean, this kind of begs the question: is now so? I feel like more than ever. I feel like people say, when people say you ruined your car, it's because it like is genuinely like ruined, total. Because
you salvage title.
Yeah, salvage title because you cut it up, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As before, people would be it would be an expression. You put neon lights on it. You put some wonky wheels on it. You lower it. Oh, you ruined it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I remember
it's a figure of speech. You ruined it. Yeah, is it really ruined? No. Is it salvaged? No, it's just not your taste.
As long as you like it.
Or a lot of that stuff is like kind of reversible. Where with wide bodies, it's not as easily reversible as let's say just replacing your bumpers or adding side skirts to the car. Where in like the 2000s, that tuner scene, all the stuff was fairly reversible in terms of it was just
a lot of body kit stuff still, but it was like full panel replacement,
right?
So you could just like put the OEM
like it wasn't wide body where you had to cut your existing fender to get clearance, because the reason for the wide body where you have to cut it up is because when you put a wide body flare on the car and the wheel is now wider, your wheel is going to go up into the original fender that was in place, so you need to cut that to where there wouldn't be any clearance issues when, let's say, you hit a bump and it goes up into the fender.
What are your guys' opinions on wide bodies? So, I mean, I know I own two wide body cars myself. Steven, you own a wide body car.
Yes.
And Alex, you've never salvaged a title.
No. Stock body for life, you know. That's just my personal opinion. But I think, like, the wide body scene is definitely, let me finish this statement before you interject, is definitely
wrong.
What is this, an Instagram comment section? The wide body trend as far as like the Rocket Bunny and all that kind of stuff does really feel like it's on a decline, or at least people are less interested in it. But I think what is on the decline is like riveted kits or exposed rivets and that kind of stuff. I feel like way more people now are leaning towards
the clean molded look.
Molded or like full overs or anything like that.
On that wave, baby.
Yeah.
Innovating.
Yeah. Like the kit you're making is like large panel replacement.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's panel replacements because with certain cars, the riveted look or the bolt-on look, you could pull it off. But in my opinion with it, like, I like the clean look.
Yeah.
Where I've had bolt-on flares on the GTI for the past 4 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was just like, I'm over it. Like, this isn't the actual look that I wanted. Like, I wanted to make the car wide, which the flares accomplished that, but it just wasn't the look that I was after in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it into my own hands and then created my own thing. Talking about it as kind of like a trend situation, I definitely think it's up and down, where we might see in 5 years the trend might go back to doing bolt-on kits, just because now
you didn't see them for a while.
Now molded clean kits are the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And now people are like, oh, because the thing about kind of just how your mind works is once you're used to something, you're constantly chasing something different.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why there's trends. It's because when trends normalize, a new trend comes out that's different.
As soon as everyone's doing it, shit's not sick no more.
Yep. So right. Exactly. So if you see everybody else doing it, don't do the same thing. Figure out something that's different.
Yeah. You know, outside the box.
Or just do things that fit your own style that you like.
Yeah.
Inside the box.
Jack in the box.
Yeah.
Nice.
Chicken fingies. But I think, like, don't get me wrong, I definitely still think, like, riveted kits or exposed hardware in general still, like, looks good on a lot of builds. But I just feel like the hype that we saw a handful, maybe a few years ago, has just totally changed away from people being, I don't know, it was almost like people were stoked to see hardware originally.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like a rocket ship.
Well, that's the thing. Before Rocket Bunny, before bolt-on, like, flare kits, it was all metal wide bodies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was the norm. That's how people created a wider body on cars, or custom fiberglass panel replacements, whatever it was. That was the norm. People didn't really do a bolt-on flare kit.
Right. Yeah. And even
that's why it was such like a big thing at that time, where it was something completely new.
Right. And even like what you were saying right now, the wide body metal thing, I think even prior, from my knowledge, and this may be completely incorrect, but before I started seeing the riveted on wide bodies and the fiberglass wide body kits, the metal wide bodying that people would do to cars previously to like tub their car to get more wheel clearance, whatever, I almost like had no idea that this was
it existed
or it was a wide body or something that people did, because I don't think it was that common, or people would do it in a fashion in which it looked like the body was just extended.
Exactly.
It's like, actually more common than you think, because these classic car restoration modification shops are these people that are modifying, let's say, a 32 Ford or a 1950 Ford pickup or whatever it was, like these classic cars.
They need some more space.
They're reworking the entire body of these cars, where like you see at Cars and Coffee, like a 1930s car,
mm-hmm.
where it's like chop top, this and that, where
yeah.
that whole body's been reworked.
It looks
like it's how it is.
It looks, but it looks OEM because that's how well done it is.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It was executed so well, but that entire body has been stripped down just to the body and reworked, all that shaping done on the body lines, whatever it may be. That's all custom metal work. So that's why there's a stigma around bolt-on flares, which I've gotten it heavily, given that I've rocked bolt-on flares, and that stigma is bolt-on flares is not a wide body.
I was just about to say that. We got to talk about that.
I got wrecked for that initially when I wide-bodied my cars, because I just put flares on, and people are like, that's not a wide body. They're just flares. And I'm like,
This is where, in my head, you might not, but I do. This is where I draw the line, and I go, who cares, dog? Like, it's, to me, same thing. I don't know about you guys as the wide body guys, but flare guys.
There is a line with it where I understand their point, where it's a removable piece, so it's not technically the car.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're putting something on the car that is making it wider.
The body wider.
So,
we're on the same page, because I was going to just argue that when you put the flares on, the wheelbase needs to get wider. The car essentially gets
wider. It has a wider, wider body.
I think I just had a panic attack because am I realizing this in real time right now? That maybe we're the younger kids who changed the definition and took it too literal, similar to how the younger guys now are like taking like some definitions too literal and changing the meaning of them.
Oh man.
Oh, was it the old heads?
It's just a harsh realization in the moment as we're saying it.
Frick.
Oh no. That is true.
Okay, podcast canceled, guys.
Yeah, I'm done. I have to quit this.
Okay.
Go watch Pass Gas.
It's been a good
No, that's an interesting point of view.
Right.
Cuz that's something where it's easy to forget that aspect. Mm-hmm. Where we have people older than us who have experienced a whole different culture and style telling us how they've experienced it, because it's different than how we've experienced it, and they're saying their opinion. And now we have a whole generation under us that are experiencing a whole different type of culture and style, and we have our opinion on it, where it's a generational cycle.
Yeah,
but it's weird kind of being in it now, because we've experienced it when we first got in and we were younger. And now we're experiencing a generation under us, and that's kind of a trip.
Okay, this whole podcast is changing. We're no longer discussing wide bodies. We're having an existential crisis.
This is my quarter-life crisis. I guess I never made that same. I always knew that, like, it's all a cycle, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like the jump from, like, the generation of guys behind us, they're like the style was so different. It's like distinct, like time change.
Yeah.
And then like our high school times compared to people's high school times now. Granted, it is a slightly less
of a
time gap.
Oh, right?
But the style, I feel like, is more universal now.
Yeah.
Where a lot of things just carry over regardless of age or right. how long you've been doing it.
The same, and that's what I kind of feel like, the same, what I was talking about earlier, is there's a distinctive time change in style in which people were building their cars. And right now, I think our distinctive time change was that riveted on, bolted on wide body kit.
But
now I feel like it's kind of in the same space where it's kind of staying the same, fading out, kind of changing, and then kind of going back to like old things. Yeah. And so I don't even really know definitively what the style is, but
I think it's trying to figure out something different, and something new isn't necessarily being created. Stuff is just being altered in a different way where they're bringing stuff back that was done in the 90s or 2000s and just putting a different spin on it to where it's not necessarily new.
Mm-hmm. But it's like a collage of
culture. It's new to the moment of things.
Yeah. And it's new to all the younger dudes who've never seen it before.
Exactly.
And then there, that starts like a whole other thing.
Where it's like what I've seen a lot, which is pretty damn cool, is I've seen a good handful of people that are younger, 18, 17 years old, their first build is like a 1940s, 1950s car. Mm. And they're doing like work on that stuff where they're bagging it, doing custom work on that. And like, I think that's cool because it's like, that just shows, okay, your style's completely different than the norm of this generation.
Yeah.
You're going based off of kind of like what you grew up around.
More traditional. Might be
more traditional.
Yeah.
To where you're not just going off of, oh, I'm going to get a FRS because that's the hot kind of trend car going around right now. I'm going to get something that I grew up because my dad had one or something.
Right.
Which I think that's kind of cool where you have a 17, 18-year-old kid building a car that's five times its age.
Right. Yeah, true.
I definitely
hopefully it starts.
Yeah, I also think that. Now today I see more young kids building full tube chassis cars.
Oh, yeah, I feel like people are going crazier from the get-go now.
Right.
It's like because of the vast amount of information that's just accessible, a lot of people are just like going crazy beyond what we could have done a handful of years ago.
I think COVID did play a big part in that to where so many people, like, there wasn't school or work or people were just at home, locked down. So what do? They work on their stuff.
Or research.
Research, work on whatever it is. Yeah. There's the amount of people actually like working on their cars, learning how to work on their cars, doing some extreme stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's more than how it was 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
100%.
Yeah. And it might just be now because we have social media, we just see it more. And because 10 years ago, there wasn't social media, so you didn't know Bill in Colorado knew that build. Where this, now we have social media and everybody's on social media pretty much.
Yeah.
To where now we see everybody across the country or world and their builds. Versus 10 years ago, we didn't know this guy in Spain has this crazy build that's blowing up on online or whatever.
Right, that's true because I feel like everybody and their mother, their dad and their grandpa have some sort of story about, oh, me and my dad built this tube chassis 5-second drag car in our garage.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know what kind of accent that was. It changed as it went along.
Like, interesting. Going off that, like, I've heard stories of some crazy stuff that was, like, that went down in, like, the 80s or the 90s. Right. Like, some crazy builds. But it's, like, that time there was nothing for it to go viral with or anything like that.
But there's no way that there's the same amount of people doing it and we just didn't see it because now it's become a trend. It's
ever since
rap music, like every single rap music video now has like a S13 and the NSX.
When you stop seeing like the donks and everything being rap videos and you started seeing these drift cars, you're like,
which is sick. Shout out Sebastian. But it definitely like plays a part in the overall like wake that creates through the non-car people who see it.
Since TikTok. Yeah, I think TikTok is kind of really what pushed cars as a trend where the concept of TikTok is you're seeing people that you don't follow.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing, you're forced to see people that you don't follow and you're forced to see things, hobbies, whatever it is that you may never have been interested in. and now you're interested in.
Yeah.
Especially through COVID too, where people were just scrolling on TikTok and whatnot, and they see some person building some cool car.
That's why I got the racing sim.
You saw it on TikTok.
I saw it on TikTok, and I was like, oh, wait, that tech is already out? I'm an idiot.
And there's the con about that as well, where there's these people that are seeking it for attention because they know that it's a trend now. There's a lot of attention in the car community. You could go viral with car stuff.
Yeah.
So people are getting in it because they know they could have attention with it. I mean, you build something cool, you'll get attention off of it, and that's their focus.
Let's be honest. Half of I'll say mostly on TikTok, not too much on Instagram. I'm stuttering a lot on this episode, but I'm working through it.
Today.
No, but I think you see a lot more car people getting like clout or famous or whatever, and like they barely have a car. Yeah. Like it's not even modified that much. They just consistently talk about it all the time, and now they're like a car influencer. Yeah. We're getting way off topic.
Yeah, we're definitely getting way off topic. You guys want to like 180?
Yeah, come back.
To the wide body thing, and we are gonna hurt some feelings right here. This one is gonna
are
hurt
we?
Some feelings. Yeah.
What are we gonna talk about?
Your wide bodies.
Oh no.
And your stance on would it salvage a title?
Oh yeah, we were just having this discussion here.
We were having this discussion earlier.
I think this is very interesting, and from a perspective of
from the theory. So break it down from the theory is if you were to, you know, just normal dude, wide bodying your car, if you were to show your insurance agent your machine that you built, would they deem that as a salvage car? Would they total it out?
Because especially, especially if you showed them underneath. Like if you took the flares off. Now, if you got that metal wide body, it's a real wide body. You don't have to worry about it. But no, I think that's a really like a funny thing to talk about because it's like, no one really brings it up because honestly, no one.
Well, even then, with
cares,
a
but.
Metal wide body, you're still cutting the original.
Yeah, but to like quarters. An insurance company, that's still a car on it. You know,
yeah.
If that makes sense. But I just think from like my dad owned a body shop for a long time, and knowing like how easily cars just get totaled out like nothing.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, you're cutting up anything under $30,000. You're totaling that car, but then it's not actually totaled or salvaged because you didn't report it, or it's not like you're seeking to get it fixed or anything like that, or like, get it like back to factory.
Like my, given like, that, let's do an example with my GTI. It's wide bodied. It's a clean title. It's not reported to the insurance or anything. That
if you showed them the pictures off your story this weekend, they would be
like, totaled.
That whole car's gone.
Yeah, like what's left with it? What was I saying?
If you showed the bank that statement too, they'd be like, "Where's our car?"
They'd be like, "Oh, that's where all this money went."
Let's say, given that it's not reported or anything like that, it's still clean title, but obviously you put that work or what they would classify as damage to the car. If let's say you get into an accident and you're seeking help from the insurance, would they just reject you given the work that you put into it, or would they still pretty much just blind eye it and just say, like, let's say you want to keep the wide body, you don't want to like, let's say, redo the quarter panels and fix it and go back to stock body. You want to keep it as is. Would they pretty much deem it like, no, screw off? Or would they carry on with it and just kind of blind eye to the wide body, even though you are altering the original paneling?
Yeah. I think it's the situation where if that were the case in a very specific instance and you weren't looking to correct it in any way, they wouldn't account that probably towards the damage that needs to be fixed. And I'm like 99% sure is if you don't have any of your aftermarket parts listed with your insurance, they're not going to get covered. Like if you have $6,000 wheels and someone wrecks into you and destroys them.
Yeah. You got to tell
dust
them
in the wind.
Cause one thing, if you do talk with your insurance, you list out your mods and it's included into your plan. Yeah, it might raise your rate a little bit given that, yeah, it's a higher liability given that the dollar amount of what your car is worth is now more. But if you mention it to them, they will cover, let's say, a certain percentage or a good percentage of those modifications that let's say, get damaged in a car accident. And I feel like, let's say if you mention the wide body and you did that work to it and you say it to them, that they might not write it off as salvage. Because when something's classified as salvaged, it has to like go through something that damages it, and you have to go through a repair process. And if the repair process exceeds the value of the car,
then it's total.
They total it, and then they salvage the title.
Exactly.
But if you just tell them, hey, I did this work to it, I don't know if they would just be like, nope, it's totaled.
No, like, I don't think they would. You would have to be, like, going out of your way to seek it being fixed for them to then deem it, be like, hey, this isn't worth it because, like you said, the worth of fixing it is more than the car itself.
Yeah.
So my question to you guys, aside from insurance, what is your standpoint on the wide body? Is the car physically ruined? Like, do you think the value of the car is then ruined? Or do you think that when the panels are all on it and it's wide bodied properly and everything is bolted all together, do you still think the value of that car is good?
I think it remains somewhat consistent, but like if I'm buying a car and it's wide body, if it's has flares on it or is wide bodied, I'm taking money off. Like that does not, that doesn't
if
add
I
money.
If I want a car that's like clean and I'm looking for something like stock body and it's has flares, or I won't even bother because I know, like, okay, the chances of it being a hack job are very high. Like, the chances 90%. Of somebody actually doing the right process with the wide body, let's say when they cut up the quarters, re-weld it, seal it properly, keep the structural integrity, the chances of that, of somebody actually doing that,
very slim.
Very small.
I feel like that's the part people forget. Now, I haven't wide-bodied a car, but, like, I feel like you start doing it, and you're like, oh, just cut it out, and then you're like, oh my god, like I have to weld and like cut all this metal and like I'm just gonna duct tape.
They start cutting the fender and they realize that there's another fender. That there's still the fender, the wheelhouse area, which like, oh, what do I do with that?
Yeah. Duct tape, dude.
What they do is they do the slits, which you're supposed to do, bend it up, and then they just leave it like that.
Yeah, I've seen
They kick just a bunch of sealer.
I've seen that too.
Goop it up just to seal it, which...
It really depends car to car.
It's subjective, for sure.
Yeah.
I definitely think that there are wide-body cars that are worth more after they've been wide-body.
RWB.
Yeah.
Like my car, being an RWB.
Or when people put the kit that I'm producing on their GTI.
Yeah. Perfect. It'll be priceless.
Salvaged.
Shut up, Keith.
Hey, sorry. He doesn't like the creative direction that we're going in.
Yeah, he's really complaining about the lighting. He's really picky. I'm sorry. But yeah, I think definitely for sure, like the wide body for, I mean, from like what, 5 years ago? When did it actually first pop?
I would say like 2012.
2012 till probably the next, like, I would say 3 to 4 years.
I hope longer, because I'm producing a wide body kit company.
Oh no, it'll be not what I'm saying at all. They'll still be around and popular and all that. I'm saying, like, I feel like that is what you guys are saying, the time period that will be looked at as like the wide body time.
Yeah, the wide body era. Yeah. It'll still always be around, but then it's gonna shift where it's like there's gonna be something new.
Yeah.
And 5 years that's going to take over that attraction.
Yeah.
Okay, and now one thing I wanted to talk about, there's a lot of people who predict, like, in the future of somebody trying to find a stock body car, that it will be nearly impossible as to how many people are taking them and cutting them. And I feel like
in 20 years, you won't be able to find an S13 that's stock body anymore.
You won't be able to find an S13, period, bro.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like the FRSs are already becoming the new, like, 240s, or eventually they will
be. It's harder to find a stock body FRS.
Exactly. I think that's what's going to be the difficult part. It's just like the 240s, where it's like a nightmare to find an untouched one. You're going to have the same problem with FRS BRZ 86.
There's so many wide body ones of those cars.
But also, I'm just going to throw this hat in the ring here. As well as like the wide body time, I think this is also the time of not like the time that it came out, but the time that it popularized, like Big Camber.
Big Camber, yeah. and low, like slammed vehicles.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the slam vehicles might not have been popular here. But they definitely were like other places.
Actually, like, no, it's the slam kind of, it's been around, like, especially with the old stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's a lot of old stuff where it's like, they've been around.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, in like 2012, around that time, maybe 2014, I was around a lot of cars where their thing was frame banging, and that was this shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put this thing as low as I can, static, so that it scrapes the freaking...
Scratches yeah, the ground.
So it scrapes the street reflectors in the ground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the biggest thing. And you know what's funny? It's any Mustangs that were doing that. Like,
oh, yeah. The Mustangs went through their own whole, like, stance phase. After, like, one guy did it, everyone was like, wait, you can do this?
Well, also around 2012, 2013, that's, I feel like, when there was a big push with air suspension development.
Yeah, because
that's
when stuff pushed
into, like, okay, no more airlift, switches airlift is releasing the V2 setup, or it was becoming analog to where, or not analog.
It was moving away from analog.
Yeah, moving away from analog.
Digi.
Yeah, so it became digital, which that was a huge development push on the air suspension world to where now air suspension can truly compete with the proper
it definitely didn't used to be that way. Like, even when I got into it, air suspension was still this, like, very soft show only type of thing where you have, like, some,
it was just some paddle switches where it's like you just want to be low. So it's just like you just hit switches, that's it.
Keith is just on one tonight, so just I'm sorry.
Gotta deal with it.
I didn't know that this episode was that bad. Sorry, Keith.
But yeah, I think that's a good point too. The development of air to the point it is now, to where, like, most people have it.
Yeah, because
that's true. Because most people didn't run air.
Yeah.
2012.
Most people. Static. Yeah, it was either static, as in like slammed, good fitment, blah blah blah, like that type of static, or just like not low, you know. And then the guys who went bags were like, oh my god, you went bags? Yeah. You know?
Yeah. No, there's a big push in that side. So it's like
bags, wide body, camber, really all of the, like, very stereotypical stuff.
The camber didn't, like, that wasn't back in 2012, really. That was a little bit...
2012, I feel like, is where I started to see it, like, on Stance Nation and stuff. It wasn't, like, crazy how it is now. It was, like, -5, and people were like, whoa! And
yeah,
it was,
like, -6. The people that were just, like, rocking the crazy slam, static, those types of setups, like, they were rocking camber but it was still under -10.
Yeah. So, but the Bibu guys, like, in Japan,
that's what I was gonna say.
They've been going bananas for forever.
Yeah, yeah, because I think I distinctly remember around 2013.
We're talking about US.
2013, 2014, that Celica that Alex called out was right then. And
he was doing Sudani before I ever saw anything like that.
I don't know if you guys remember, but right around that time, there is a Honda Fit who had camber that made it look like a UFO because the wheels were so
The wheels were like 13 inches.
Yeah.
Like, it was super tiny.
Yeah,
like,
and it literally looked like it was a UFO because it had so much camber.
I think I remember seeing, like,
Honda Fit, and then there was also a VW Lupo.
Yes.
Where there was that VW that was only sold in Europe, but it was that... It was the same shit where it's like super, super tiny wheels, super boxy car, and then insane camber to where it looked like a spaceship.
It's almost like
wheels were like sideways.
Yeah.
It's almost like K car style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I will say is something new that I haven't seen is, like, people going the extra mile to get camber. I've seen slotting coilovers before. I've seen some crazy things done to top hats.
I saw one today, dude. I can't talk about it, because it would be mean to bring it up, but I could not believe it. Tearing rain trays out, recklessly, like, drilling.
Yeah.
Well,
it's just correct size holes for strut towers that shouldn't be there.
It's just...
That's what I was talking about. And somebody fully cut a strut, their coilover, and welded it sideways.
To get
more camber. I was like, there's no fucking way.
Excuse my language. Are you talking about the front struts?
I don't know which ones they were in. They may have been the front. They may have been the rear. I just saw the
TikTok. One of them comes with like angles.
Because for the front struts, that's like, at least for Volkswagens, that's a common like thing to do if you want camber, where you do angle sleeves for the bottom of the strut.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he did. Yeah. And the slip sleeve, I was like, I've never seen that before.
Which?
Oh, like making it out of a pre-existing one?
Yeah, he cut a BC coil over.
Just
like, which?
And welded it into a new angle and then slid it in. And he put it in the knuckle and it's like bent outwards. Like,
which, that's kind of been done low-key for quite a minute. Now people are like starting to produce that and selling it as like, oh, for your airlift bag or your BC strut or whatever it is, because with VWs it's hard to get front camber where it's like you push in the top hat all the way and you're at -3. So those angle sleeves for the struts, that was a big thing for camber with Volkswagens, and in my opinion with it, like, I wouldn't say it's like that's extreme. Like, I've seen some way gnarlier, unsafe, extreme stuff.
Yeah, when I say extreme, I'm talking like unsafe, like reckless.
Negative 25, negative 30 degrees camber.
Not even the way they did it is like sketch as shit, you know? And that'll be remembered with
where
us
it's like,
along
I've
with
seen guys,
washers.
I've seen guys like in the rear where they fucking hack it all up in the rear. That sounded horrible. they hack it up on the rear to where you have the fueling happening too.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, I watched that. Some dude, it was a Volkswagen where he had to fill it up.
Shout out that guy. Just followed you.
Yeah, he had to pull up his rear wheel to gas up.
That thing is sick. You're a psychopath.
Love it.
Yeah, congrats. That's wild. I saw that and I was like, every time you get gas? That's unbelievable.
Like, how I think, just put a fuel tank or a fuel cell in your car, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I think
or reroute some, the fuel filler neck, bro.
Someone was saying something that like there was some reason he couldn't do it, but I don't know.
Rocket Boney did. He can. They're the same car.
I don't know, bro. I don't know. You're the Volkswagen guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I just know that they put gas in their wheel well.
Yeah, I just know
I saw that and I was just like, bro, all that for camber? But I was like, that's wild.
It's really all that for static. He wouldn't need to. I don't think he'd need to do that if he was back.
No. Yeah. It is for static then. No.
So he doesn't rub through his fuel hose. Wild. Anyways, but yeah, these are the times we're talking about where like our
like we didn't see this in the 2000s. That's for sure.
Yeah. Which the people in the 2000s are probably like good, you know.
Yeah.
And we'll probably look at some people in the future and be like, glad that wasn't a thing. Like when Sudani came out. Hey. I mean, still. Hate it.
Like, but we're like, let's say 5 years from now, we're gonna see kids in the future. Now they're gonna be doing reverse fitment to where they're gonna be going fucking positive. barrel to fender positive camber.
I don't even want to see it. Don't even Photoshop it. Don't even try it. I don't want
to
see it.
Actually, Photoshop it and send it to us. I'm interested. I want to see some.
We'll feature it.
Horrible.
In the front.
No, we're just gonna watch it. Download the photo onto her phone and then delete it. Yeah. Automatically right after.
Okay, straight to the trash.
Yeah.
What size is this shirt? Cool, that'll fit in the trash. Anyways, where do you guys want to take this from here? I feel like we kind of covered the memorable parts of I'm gonna say our generation, for a lack of a better explanation, but the trends that will carry on definitely into the future, like the wide body stuff. Now, obviously, we didn't really cover it, but the wide body stuff existed way before all this and the racing and all that stuff. Yes. We're just talking about from like a car scene,
enthusiast modifying their car.
A cultural port.
Yeah.
Port. As, just to touch on that quickly with the race car. With the race car aspect. 20, 30 years ago, people weren't building cars to look like race cars and drive them on the street. They were leaving that separate. Race cars are race cars. That's it.
That's true.
A lot of the culture now is, how can I get my car to look as much of a race car as possible and still have it street legal?
Yeah.
That's true.
I feel like both sides of the spectrum, race car and non-race car, has gotten to the point where people are pushing it to
extremes.
Like, we want to make this just as illegal as possible.
Yeah. Up.
Yeah.
Illegal how possible, legal but can we get it? Legal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Well.
Tell that to my windshield tint. That is not extreme. That's not what I was saying. Don't take that out of context. Anyways, okay, we're going to continue. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay.
Like my if you or a loved one is suffering from mesothelioma, you might be entitled to some severe call financial compensation.
1-800-EMPIRE.
Nice. You said that last video that you don't give free promos.
Wentworth. Oh, I am sponsored
877
by
Cash Now.
Yeah, I'm sponsored by JG Wentworth. Don't trip. It's we go way back.
That's how I fund my stuff.
Yeah, I was the yodel guy in the original. Oh, yeah. That was actually my great grandfather.
I see the resemblance now.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm gonna Google that and be depressed later. All right. Moving into
current event.
Tonight's current event.
Current event.
What is it, Tyler?
What are we talking about tonight?
The coolest thing that has hit the automotive market in a long time. Okay.
Maybe ever.
Maybe ever. I wasn't a huge Euro guy, but now I'm a diehard Euro guy because I'm a part of the Porsche fans, you know. And AMG, a sister to our beloved Porsche community, is coming out with an AMG One. What is an AMG One, you might ask? It's an F1 car that you could drive on the street.
Is that similar to an Xbox One?
It's not similar to an Xbox
Not at all.
I've lost interest. But continue.
So it's pretty much a full-fledged, I would call it a hypercar, not a supercar.
I'm not even going to call it a hypercar or a supercar. It's a fucking race car, okay? It's an F1 car that goes on
so
the street.
It's going to look like a hypercar. Like, it's going to look like a Pagani or a Koenigsegg, like another hypercar. But it's pretty much an F1 car in terms of everything put into it performance-wise.
Okay,
like, it's straight up an F1 motor that they use in the F1 AMG cars.
Yeah, literally. That's why I keep saying it.
It's a 1.6 liter hybrid V6. With
1,049 horsepower.
Yep. Half of that is the ICE motor, the 1.6 V6, and then half of that is the electric motors. And mind you, the turbo with the V6 is also electric assisted, which I don't know if you caught in previous episodes where AMG is going to be introducing electric assisted turbos in the future with AMG production cars like the C63. This just shows you that they're reeling it out with this insane hypercar.
Huge unveil for that.
Like, huge.
To incorporate that in this car is dramatic, to say the least.
And the thing that is the coolest thing about it is for everybody who's F1 inspired and anybody who wants to drive a race car, you can make the argument for your McLaren, Lamborghini, Ferrari, when you buy your supercars, whatever, that it's like an F1 car or that it's super fast. But nothing is truly going to outdo this car quite yet. This AMG One even has the controls on the steering wheel like an F1 car. Everything about this is oriented and produced with AMG, the racing team, and Lewis Hamilton, so that they can like make a full-on,
and it has air conditioning.
And it's got air conditioning.
It has air conditioning, which is just it's so cool. It's so dumb, but it's just so cool.
Cup holders?
I don't know.
Maybe. Oh, we don't know, but they do have a.
That's going to be my deciding factor if I get one or not.
And mind you,
they have a touchscreen LCD navigation and whole
LSD?
LCD.
I don't know, but they have a full touchscreen nav and everything like a regular car would have, as well as not quite cup holders. I don't know about, but I do know they have USB slots in there to charge your phone.
Oh. It's probably got 212s.
And mind you, we're talking about this car, and I could guarantee nobody watching or listening this. We'll ever have one.
There's only
275 units made, and the going price for them, mind you, retail, not marked up or whatever it may go out to, $2.7 million.
Worth it.
That is $2.7 million more than I could afford.
That's only
and they're already sold out, so
that's only like a mil over a F40, dude. Who cares?
Chump money. I'm like, just come on, I want it.
What?
Yeah, so that's another thing. They're already sold out.
You're probably never gonna get it, but the cool thing about this car is that it is a street legal race car.
So you might see it at your local Cars and Coffee.
Probably maybe. Not, unless you're an OC.
Yeah.
So we're going to see it. We're going to see it at our local Cars and Coffee, we will take photos of it.
Yeah. I'll touch it. Yeah, watch me, sticky fingies.
I want to sit in that car. I normally don't geek out over cars really, and it's like we're kind of desensitized to like supercars being in Orange County as well. We're like
I didn't used to be. Yeah. I got desensitized so fast.
Yeah. I saw an F40 this morning.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Just casually.
Oh okay, cool.
Yeah,
but with this, of course, maybe after seeing it like one or two times in person, if like there's one local in OC, I'll be like, oh yeah, I've already seen it. But seeing it for the first time, it's gonna be cool. Yeah. And it's like at our local Cars and Coffee, like we've seen Koenigseggs and Paganis, where it's like those are like $5 million cars too. Mm. And it's like those are cool in my opinion too, where it's like I geek out of those a little bit, but I don't know, those just don't do it for me.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I'll take one, dog. If you're throwing out Koenigseggs, well, holler at your
boy. If you say it like that, yeah. But in terms of like viewing it, it's like, it's cool. I'd rather see.
Like, cool. I just saw seven of them in a row.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
But with this, I don't know. This one just
feels different.
It's different.
It feels different also because the paint scheme all emulate the actual F1 car. The roof scoop, it's got the fin like the F1 car. Well, it literally looks like
a Mercedes car. Hasn't done something like this since the CLK GTR.
Didn't even think about that.
But it was a CLK AMG GTR race car, which was the one that it looked like a Mercedes like CLS.
Yeah,
but it was just pretty like super low,
full race car. Yeah.
Straight
yeah.
race car. Yeah. Like that was kind of the last thing I remember from Mercedes in the supercar aspect of things. They haven't done a supercar.
That's a good point. Totally. Yeah. Other than I guess
versus like Pagani and Koenigsegg, they're only super they're only hypercars. Yeah. That's all they make. Mercedes is your like you could buy a class for $30,000.
Right. And it makes sense with their F1 team to build something like this. I feel like. Is they are the ones who are capable to push this out.
100%. And I just think that it's awesome. And I kind of think it ties back into our idea that we were talking about last time where Alex brought it up, where this may be the last hurrah to build something cool before everything goes to electric.
I feel right? like that's why I feel like all these companies are like right now releasing all this like crazy stuff we've always wanted just because... You know, soon
now's the time.
It's not going to be an option.
Which is also sad.
Yeah,
because it's really like depressing. They're doing all this, and then in 5 years, it's going to be all electric in terms of what's going to be released, and it's like, oh no.
But by that time, there might be some crazy, crazy electric advancements that we are looking forward to. You never know. Who knows?
Yeah,
probably not. But
if you could make an electric car feel like a regular combustion car, maybe. But the chances of that happening are very slim. So yeah, I'm going to bank on Toyota and Lexus with their hydrogen fuel cell combustion engines.
Gang.
Let's all bank on that and hopefully other companies follow with keeping the combustion engine alive.
Speaking of, I'm just going to throw this out there. I've been trying to speak it into existence. Speaking of last hurrah, if anybody has a connection of where I can drive an LFA.
Oh, bro.
I'm trying, bro.
And don't worry, he's not going to stance one out.
He's manifesting it.
Just once, before I die, that's all I want, drive an LFA. Just in the realm of like things that are going to come to
I just
want to
sit in one and rev one and hear that.
If anybody's got one.
I've never even seen one in person.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've never seen one.
Yeah, I saw one this morning.
I hate you.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah. Feel a little bit better.
Anybody out there listening, watching, viewing this podcast of any sort, please hit up your boy and just... Give him a ride.
Just let me slide. Yeah, I'll take a ride. That's fine. Yeah. I'll let you whip the... You don't want it.
You bit your tongue on that real quick.
Let me test fit the 326 wheels on the LFA, dog. Anyways, back to the Mercedes. I had to just, you know... I'm trying to manifest my destiny here. Yeah. Me and Keith trying to ride shoddy in the LFA. Okay.
LFA, AMG 1.
Same thing.
Yeah. Easy.
You don't want to ask me.
What? Which one would you choose? If they were both free,
honestly,
and you're given the keys, you're handing both of them like this.
Which one would you choose?
Just This is I really
you got to think smart on this too.
I know. Can I resell it after?
Okay,
because then
can,
I'm obviously.
But okay, look, if you can,
I got to do the LFA. I'm sorry. I'm that guy. It's more important to me emotionally. I'm not that big on performance.
Okay. It's respectable. Yeah. It's respectable. Yeah. Like I would choose a Golf over the AMG one.
True.
Dude, just right kidding.
No,
I'm just kidding.
There's no way. There's no way.
Honestly, the Golf W12 GTI concept that they did like a decade ago with the Mark V, they did a full custom wide body that looked super like natural on the car. Like the doors were even wide with the whole car too. And they stuffed a W12 motor in it.
Okay. Maybe someone's got to tell them to calm down.
So I want to just see it in person because it's in Germany, the concept car.
True.
But like, what if I just reproduce that car? Like, I get a Mark V and then I just like
make a
replica. I make a rep, bro.
Oh no!
Whole
rep.
Oh no!
We're
shit.
Diving deep in a rabbit hole that we shouldn't have opened with,
yeah.
Steven.
Anyways,
AMG One, crazy F1 car, super cool. Look into it. Fast F1 AMG.
Won't beat a Dodge Demon. No, I'm kidding.
No, jeez.
Okay, so, I think that brings us right into our late night call out.
You always say it like a jingle, man.
Because it's got to be.
It's late like night call out. See, I don't do it right.
Pizza.
Alex, your turn.
Oh, I'm going first this time.
It's
okay.
Backfired.
Let me find his name real quick.
Who is your call out?
My shout out is DeWill. DeWill Kid. Yeah. He owns a 2JGS. It is a like full drift taxi build, like VIP drift car. It's wide body, of course. Big turby. Four brides, crazy cage work.
He's got four brides? Wow, are they mail order?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
VIP table because he's keeping it real.
But it's a full-blown drift car.
Yeah, no, it is like... He also has like one of the craziest, sickest, hypest... street drifting videos I've ever seen, even though it was done on a closed road, and you definitely should not report that.
Professional drivers, closed course.
Exactly. Mexico.
All legal.
Yeah.
Mexico.
But yeah, I've been following him for a minute now. His car is like... If I had to pick of like... You know, I was talking last episode where I was like, I wish I had one of every type of build. If I had to like pick a pre-built drift car... I'd probably pick his just because it's so like right up my alley. It's unique. It's Lexus, of course.
Big Lexus gang.
Yeah. Except I wouldn't know anything about it. There's a lot of fancy, special, expensive stuff on there.
And you'd also probably paint it white, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit, a hint of some spice, sparkly white.
Yeah.
Bro, you've only had white cars. Come on.
Yeah. Lexus Ultra White. What's up? No paint code. You can look it up.
Google it, bro.
Yeah.
Just like the wheel specs you ask.
19x3.
Dude, you know what's funny is before you posted it, I used to do that to people all the time. They'd ask me my wheel specs.
Oh, yeah, and, give them the wrong ones.
And I give them, this is my go-to, 19x10, -63.
Oof.
And they'd be like, -63. And I'm like, yeah, bro.
Those are specs that people actually fit on their cars now.
I know.
Like, no problem.
I know. It's crazy.
Just, oh, my
but
gosh.
When you say -63, it's more often than not, you can't order a -63 because the sizing is so
difficult
to produce.
I have seen some wheels that people built for, of course, for a wide body car. Like, I've seen it go into, like, -125 offset.
Anyways, but that's my shout out. Love the car. Dude seems super cool. Definitely drives the absolute shit out of it. But, yeah, mad respect to you, dude.
Nice.
What about you, Steve?
So my call out for the night is going to be John Ludwig. And I've been following him for a minute just because the uniqueness out of his builds. He doesn't just have one build. He's done plenty of stuff over the years. A couple to name a few. One is a BMW 700, which is this tiny 1960s BMW that he pretty much body dropped full patina to where like the body looks like it's all rusted out patina style, looks crazy. A Corvair that's also slammed body or patina, all that. One that kind of grew my attention towards it and kind of what made me follow him was way back he did a Vaz Zhigli, which is a it's a Russian car. It's over in Europe during the communist times. It's also kind of known as a Lada, which they're two separate companies, but they shared the same blueprint and produced the same vehicle, just under different companies, different regions, whatnot. That thing was insane. He built that, or he slammed that fender to lip fitment. It looked absolutely insane. So the builds he puts out are just super unique. The patina builds he does, insane. He just finished up W108 Benz that he brought out to a Euro show and got it ready to bring out to. That thing is just insanely clean. So he's a Euro guy. Like, the majority of his builds are Euro cars, all bagged, which is he really executes them. But just the uniqueness with the builds he puts out in terms of what he does. One in particular that I'm super excited for that he just picked up to is a Auto Union. I think it's a 1000 SP model. So this was before Audi was actually Audi, and it was called Auto Union. So this is like old school, and this thing looks absolutely insane. So check out his profile, check out his stuff, because he's going to be getting after that car soon, and that's going to be body drop too. And that's also patina. It's just wild.
He's got a taste.
Yeah, got a type.
He has got a type for the cars he does, and it's cool seeing him put his style on it too, because it's unique cars to begin with.
Yeah, so many different platforms.
So many different platforms, to where nothing's the same. Mm-hmm. He's dealing with so many different stuff in terms of the Zhigli to the BMW to the Mercedes to the Auto Union car, everything, and then he also messes with a bunch of other stuff too. So it's pretty wild, and yeah. Definitely want to see his stuff in person. He's out on the other side of the country, unfortunately. But, yeah, definitely look him out. He also has a podcast, too. So
yeah, so I was checking out H2O a long time ago.
Podcast, guys.
That was super. Yeah. It's just like, it's the cleanest, dirtiest thing you'll ever see.
that's honestly a good way to describe, like, the patina stuff he has, where it's like the body is dirty, rusty. Look, it's shit.
Every other inch it's so is good. Immaculate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I love builds like that. So yeah. Shout out to John. He's a cool dude. Definitely look him up and give him some love.
Sick.
What about you, Tyler?
Let's hear it. Wait. Let me guess. Is it another car from Japan?
It is another guy from Japan. Don't come at me, bro.
Is it another
guys
Porsche?
In Japan are doing it right.
It's another Porsche.
God. You guys are coming at me hard. Quiz.
How do I know? It's almost like we talked about this before.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Wait, no one knows. So, what's your call out?
My call out for today is Wavy Savvy 910 Design. My boy out here in Japan doing it big for the guys in Caymans. Built a slant nose Cayman. I have not seen any other ones. It is
a slant nose Cayman.
Yep, I think it's a new old design kit for the Cayman. I think these kits are like a little over 20 grand. They're ridiculous.
Cool.
And it is the only one that I know of in existence. And it is so clean. And I really mess with this build.
Because you just see the slant noses on the 911s.
Yeah. It's the same. So it's the same company who builds this kit.
Yeah.
And I think literally
they made one for
the Cayman. I think he's the only one who's rocking it.
That's crazy.
But he also builds cars. Like, he's a shop in Japan that builds these cars. This is his personal car, I think, because he's had this car for a while. And
it's kind of like the showcase car for the shop in a way, too.
And he builds things just so well. The interior on this car is amazing. This whole exterior on this car is this crazy. It's not really that crazy. It's like an olive green, but done really well. It looks
Is it Millennium Jade?
It's almost like Millennium Jade.
Okay.
And he's got the yellow headlights, everything. It just is done so well, bagged, laid out on the ground. It's great.
I love seeing well-executed Caymans, because the Caymans are pretty underrated.
Oh yeah,
I would agree. Caymans are underrated.
Obviously, you have one.
Yes, I have.
So you're not biased at all, right?
I'm not biased at all. They're just the greatest car in existence.
Yeah, just making sure.
Wait, no, they're trash.
They're definitely underrated because it's like everybody hypes over the 911s.
Yeah.
Because it's a 911.
No, Caymans are trash.
People forget that the Cayman.
They're not.
Caymans are trash. Nobody buy them. Don't make the price go up. Everybody shut up. I still want to get one, so shut up.
Oh, so you want a Cayman too?
That was my choice when I was buying the RC. I was like, RC, and then I was like, get to work reliably.
Well, just to mention, I won't be buying a Cayman.
All right. Anyway, sorry.
I'll buy a 911. But that's the point I'm making, where the Cayman's so underrated, people would rather choose a 911.
They would, and the Caymans are just so... They're great. We're getting on a different topic, but I can go on and on about how well I think these things are put together.
Yeah.
They're super lightweight. The balance of this car when you drive it is much like a Miata because it's so little, but it actually has some balls to it. It goes fast.
But the cool thing about it is people that are taking Caymans, like yourself, your call out, and they're making it super cool looking.
Right.
And they're changing the perspective of Caymans to where it's like, when you're finished with yours or seeing that guy's, like, I'd rock that setup. Like, right. that's clean. That's sick. And it's changing the perspective. It's changing the narrative of Caymans.
Yeah, because I think prior, just like a Boxster and a Cayman, I think people looked at it as a poor man's Porsche. In reality...
Yeah, I wouldn't take a Boxster, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't really...
Yeah, Boxster's a different story.
Actually, the same guy built a Pandem V2 Rocket Bunny convertible Boxster, and it looks sick because he took the Boxster and took the Cayman kit because a lot of times they have interchangeable parts. Actually, a lot of Porsches have interchangeable parts. The 911, the hood... is the same, has the same footprint, I guess you could say. And so the front fenders, headlight buckets, everything are interchangeable. I could just take them and bolt them straight on.
No way.
The door panels, everything from them. So a lot of times in Caymans, when guys modify them, they'll take the 911 headlight buckets, fenders, and front bumper and just bolt it right on.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So any viewers out there that you have a Cayman,
there's a lot of cool stuff you can do to them.
Yeah.
Give it to me. The Cayman. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay, we're off that topic.
What we didn't say early in the episode?
Subscribe.
Yeah. Yeah, we keep forgetting this.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, follow us on Instagram, TikTok. Subscribe to this channel if you're watching it on YouTube.
I want to see more subscribers.
We hit 400. 400.
I want to see a million tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's go. Optimistic,
but I'm appreciative of those of you who are here. But tell your friends, please.
Please,
for the love of God, tell your friends. We need this.
Tell your mom's cat. Because Keith needs a friend.
Yeah.
Keith does need a friend.
I am his friend. Shut up. He doesn't need any more anything around.
Oh, controlling much.
Yes.
Oh, no. But yeah. Like, comment, subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and all that.
Let us know what you think. It's like I've said multiple times, we are open to critique, insights, opinions, whatever you think.
And don't be afraid when you guys see us to come up and say what's up. We've had a lot of you guys come up to us in person, even though there's not a ton of views or a lot of people following this. We've been finding you guys somehow, and you guys are being super cool.
Yeah,
we appreciate the love.
A weird amount of people coming up being like, "Yo, love the podcast." I'm like, "How? It doesn't have views, but
it does. They're watching it.
Love you guys. That's it, guys.
We'll dap you guys up when we see you.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'll give you free dead on stickers
when we make merch and stickers for the podcast, which yes, we will be doing that soon enough. Let us know if you see us in person.
Would you rock it?
We might have some cool stuff on us. We'll see.
I always got free shit on me. Hit me up.
Okay.
Anyways,
don't hit him
bye.
Up.
Bye.
Peace.
I don't know why I just did double peace signs. Anyways, my ears hurt.
Mine do.
My ass hurts.
Don't say that one.